Blog Talk Radio.
I'd play a little Benny Hill because I forgot music. But this is Your Mother's Medicine Cabinet, and our guest is Rebecca Shimada, so we're just going to bring her on. Hello.
Hey, can you hear me?
Are you there? Yeah, I can hear you.
That was a great introduction.
A little Benny Hill? Like, I forgot
that
music,
awesome.
So I thought I should.
I don't think I could ask for more.
The song is actually like 8 minutes long, and I was like, wow, because I remember watching it when I was a kid with my grandfather and having no idea what the hell that show was about. But there you go, Benny Hill for you. I couldn't find a Zima song. That's what I was really looking for.
I think so, Benny Hill does it.
Okay, that works then. So how is it out there in Ohio?
I don't live in Ohio.
Oh, yeah, New York. Sorry. New York.
I
get confused because you're always hanging out. Because you're like always hanging out sometimes with Ohio. Yeah. I don't. So how is New York? Kingston, correct?
Yeah, I live in Kingston.
Yeah.
Great.
That's cool. Things going well for you?
You know, yeah. It's Kingston.
All right. All right. That's cool. So just want to tell the listeners, if you want to call in, I'm sure that Jeffrey will. Please don't call in the last 3 minutes of the show. I have to remind him of that. So anyways, so why don't you tell us about some of the books you got going on?
Well, before that, can I ask one request?
Oh, sure.
If anyone calls in and doesn't like Zima, they have to be excommunicated.
Okay.
Is that fair?
Okay.
They haven't tried it at least?
I will ask them that question every time if someone calls in. I will ask them if they like Zima or if they have ever tried it.
And they have to sign the petition to get it back.
Yes, there is a petition going around. Rebecca, do you have the actual petition?
I wish I did. I didn't sign my name. I'm a slacker, so. But I want to.
Oh,
I want to sign.
Okay.
So you want me to be serious now?
Yeah,
and
be serious for
question?
A few minutes. Yeah, be serious
okay.
For a few minutes, and then we can.
it's kind of hard for me, but
yeah, that's all
no,
right.
I
man.
Have a I have a book coming out from New York Quarterly in October about a pool hall that I co-owned with my husband. And it's not really about that. It's based on the characters from the pool hall. And I'm really excited about that because it's been like four, you know, the big stretch between when you write the poems and then when they get, you know, published in a book. It's like such a long stretch. So I'm really excited about that. And, you know, I have a few other books out from, I have chapbooks, but I have another full-length book from Sunny Outside Press. And so that's pretty much it.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Later on, I'll ask you another serious question, how people can obtain those books, but I'll save that for later. So is this book about the pool halls at all poems? Or...
It's all poems. It's about
okay.
150 pages of poems, and it's totally different from the stuff I had been writing previously, where it's more about other people, where sometimes you know you're writing more about yourself, but it's more about the pool hall subculture, and it's a story. It kind of goes in order from when, you know, we opened, or the narrator, you know, opened the pool hall until its demise. And it's, you know, it's cool, because I mean, I don't mean it like, oh, you know, but I mean, it's exciting because it's, you know, kind of flows like a story, and it's different than, you know, just picking up a collection of poems like I've, you know, written in the past, where, you know, it could be thematically linked, but not, you know, from A to point Z. You know,
how does one get involved in the pool hall business?
One would have a husband that really likes to gamble, and one would be really in love and willing to do anything that would be interesting, exciting.
All right. And where does the demise come in pool hall? Just not enough people wanting to play pool?
Well, have you been in a pool hall lately?
Yeah, I've been in the pool halls many times.
Yeah, no, I don't mean it like, you know, but like they're kind of like going downhill. There's some really cool pool halls that have great bars and like ritzier areas, but the standard pool hall, at least where I live, there's been pool halls, you know, throughout, you know, decades, and they started to go downhill. Like, I've noticed it wasn't just like our pool hall closed and, you know, that was it. It seemed like there were three other pool halls in our, you know, in New Paul's, because I live by New Paul's, Kingston, and like the surrounding areas that just, like, they just couldn't sustain the, you know, they couldn't sustain the business, and the overhead was high, and then the recession hit in this area pretty hard. And kind of wiped everything out. Because this was 2000, this was when the recession, we had our pool hall, I think it was 2007. I have to do the math. Yeah. And we had just had my daughter, who's now five, so yeah, 2007. And, you know, we had it all set up, it was good. And then that winter, you know, it just, the market crashed, and it was just miserable, and people couldn't pay for their own electric. So, I mean, you know, if you can't pay to have heat, you know, you're not going to go out and bang some balls around. And,
yeah.
You know. So it was kind of,
understand.
It was just that kind of deal. And I don't know if you know Kingston. Have you been in Kingston? I know you know New York a little bit.
I've been to the New Paltz area. Kingston, I'm pretty sure I stayed with a friend in Kingston. I think it was Kingston. It's right next to New Paltz, isn't it?
It's about
maybe
30 minutes north of New Paltz.
No, then I haven't been to Kingston. No, just New Paltz I've been to.
Yeah, because, well, Kingston's like this weird, it was, it's a city, but I don't really consider it a city. Like, I live in inner city Kingston, but I don't think of it as a city. When you go outside, there's, you know, we have a, you know, yard and stuff, but, you know, it's kind of got hit a few times, like in the 90s when IBM was around. They pulled out the area, and it really killed the industry, the whole, you know, everybody got killed then. And then, you know, it's just a weird city that has a difficult time, I think, standing on both legs. So it's just, it's I mean, if anyone's been to Kingston, I think they'd understand. It's just a very weird, it's right between New Paul's and Albany. It's pretty much, and it was the old, you know, capital of New York State, which is kind of weird to think of, but before Albany. But it's a very colorful city, and I think it battles a lot of recessions harder than maybe other parts of New York State. So, yeah.
So why don't you give us a poem of any book you want? Doesn't matter.
Well, I'll read some pool hall. I have to ask you, though. Hold on.
What?
All right, I'm going to ask you a question as soon as I can maneuver. All right. Do you want Bobby Balls in Hand or Mikey Meatballs?
The first one.
Bobby Balls in Hand? Okay.
Yes.
All right, I'm going to read you. I'm going to read you a poem. That's interesting. I thought you'd say that. So I actually had this one up. Bobby balls in hand. One. By six, Bobby balls in hand is down grocery money. By seven, a month without gas and cigarettes. He chalks his stick between each shot, uses a plethora of tissues to wipe sweat and chalk dust from his hands. By 10, he's down rent. By 11, he's writing an IOU. The men say he got his moniker because he can't keep Whitey on the table, but during a lull between songs, he kneels in front of the ball return to pick up an abandoned nickel, as if in confession. He speaks hesitantly. Once I was married to a beautiful woman. We had a beautiful little girl. But you know I can't resist a money game, even if I know I'll lose. When she couldn't wait up anymore, she left. No note, no forwarding address, no further contact. So that's how I really got my name. My wife left me with my fucking balls in my hand. So.
Wow, man, that was really good. I appreciate that poem. So now you have to give me, what is it, Mikey Meatballs?
Oh, no. Okay, hold on.
Well, you said two, so now you're just going to have to go into the second one because I really like the first one.
Just give me, I'm having an issue with my printer, so I've never read off my computer before. And
yeah,
I
understand.
Like
I just... I did a show yesterday where I had to read off the computer, and it's, like, really a pain in the ass because you got to scroll through everything
and
find
it. Yeah, I'm embarrassed. I've never done this before, so I apologize.
Nah, it's no big deal.
This is Mikey Meatballs. Okay. And the title of this is Table of Truth. Mikey Meatballs been kicked out of every pool hall he's ever set foot in. He's forged checks, harassed patrons, hustled a small fortune, lost a small fortune. Once he repeatedly ran his car into a guy's truck over a botched bet. He's been locked up and drugged up. He blames it all on Agent Orange. In Vietnam, he was an officer. In Jersey, he owned a billiard hall. In Brooklyn, he owned an Italian delicatessen, and they called him Papa Meatball. In Texas, he played a man for his Cadillac and won, but totaled it on his way back east. On Haight-Ashbury, he sold a hookah to a hippie for $10,000, claiming it was Jerry Garcia's. In Connecticut, he siphoned gas from some fish's car before winning his wedding band on the table. He's a regular in the police blotter, most recently for whipping his dick out at a bagel shop owner for skimping him on cream cheese. Once, he convinced some kid he shot like shit because he was using a left-handed pool cue. Last week, he told me he saw my husband pick up a prostitute on Broadway just to see my jaw drop. Instead, I responded, well, at least he's getting some. When Mikey looks into the table, he sees his own version of reality. 15 object balls, 6 pockets, and men who will believe anything he says if there's money on the table.
That was fucking kick-ass, man. Now I know what to do with the cream cheese. that was really... Are these like... I know that you were telling me that they were stories from, you know, when you owned a pool hall, but are these like actual people? Or are you, like, you know, combining a few people or something?
There's obviously when you're writing, there's definitely that, you know, fictional aspect, but there's a lot of truth in
most people. Yeah, I understand.
And Mikey was and is, he's a character. He's, and his name isn't Mikey, but his real name is just as colorful, so... these are the men that, like, kind of, like, were paying our bills for a while. And obviously, now you can see why our pool hall failed. But but especially Mikey was just, like, this you know, crazy. Now I'm calling him that because I keep, like, I run into him sometimes in Kingston, the character, and he's like, so freaking crazy. He'll, like, stop me and, like, try to, like, grab my daughter and talk to me, and it's kind of funny, but he's a real character, and same with Bob, well, Bobby was, and you kind of have to read the book to find out what happened to Bobby, because he was a character.
Well, and all the, I'm going to switch it a second, and all the, you know, a lot of people meet through other people that are writers and stuff, and I was kind of switched on to you by John Dorsey, and I think you said you knew him for nearly 20 years or something like that, some long time, and Bill Taylor, too. So is that like when you started to write around that time, or...?
Yeah, I was writing, you know, for forever, you know, as long as I can, you know, remember being a teenager and writing, like, crappy poetry. But how I met everyone was back in 90, I guess it was 90, oh, no, yeah, 90-something. I had a zine called Reuben's Kincaid, and, you know, we published... It was me and some other people, and we had published John Dorsey and Bill Taylor and Joe Varelli and Alan Catlin, and who actually lives in Albany, who I'm friends with, which is kind of weird. He's a really awesome poet. If I'm sure you know him, but if you don't, he's fucking awesome. And just a whole, like, Dan Crocker and, like, a whole bunch of people. That's how I originally got to know them. And then we stopped the zine, I think, in 2001. And, you know, I kept writing, but I didn't continue the publishing aspect of writing.
So did you, like, reconnect with all these people through the internet, like so many people have seemed to have met, or you just...
Yeah, but I think with John... John, a lot of them became my friends outside of... just poetry,
yeah.
Like people I would invite to my house, or you know, I would go to their houses, kind of thing. Like Nate Graziano, who is a New Hampshire poet, is a really good friend of mine. So is Daniel Crocker and John. Like John's probably one of my best friends. Not even, you know, poetry aside, if both of us stopped writing poetry, I think, you know, I talk to him more about life than I do about writing. If that makes any sense.
No, yeah, I understand. I was just trying to give the listeners your voyage through the writing world to where you are now is what I was trying to do, I guess. But I as like most things, we usually fail on this show or I do. But
Okay, I'm just like awkward. I like ramble on. I'm like blah blah blah.
No, that's fine. That's fine. There's still like plenty of time in the show, so. Yeah, why don't you give us another poem from anywhere?
Okay, are you sure you don't want me to ramble on about...
No,
I
there's plenty of time to do that, too.
Okay, cool. but, you know, it's cool. You know, one thing I have to say that's kind of cool is that lately I've been getting back, because I've been, you know, doing... You know, if you get into different grooves, like where you're sending your stuff out, or, like, who your publisher, who you're working with... And lately I've been really excited because I've been, like, really watching some of the smaller, you know, the zines that are coming out. And it's so nostalgic to kind of see what's going on. You know, like, you think of, like, Big Hammer and all these, like, zines that have been around since, you know, 1988 or, you know, Nerve Cowboy or, you know, and it's so cool to see, like, a whole new era, especially when the internet's so big. You know, because you kind of expect it to die out, and it hasn't. So I'm rambling. But
no, that's real. I like seeing all the prints that are out there, you know. But, yeah, go ahead. Read a poem.
All right. This one is based on a character. His name is even better. I'm going to say it because, like, the chances of him ever hearing the show are zero. But his actual name is so much better than the name I had to use. You know what I mean? And it killed me for so long. But this character is most my favorite. He's my favorite person. His name is Benny Bang Bang. Love that name. But I named him Aristotle. But there's a reason, because he was kind of philosophical in this weird way. But this one's called Sober on a Snowy Day. Outside, cars tiptoe through snow. Aristotle's on table four in his soapbox again, talking about how he sees things, you know? He says that prison does that to a person, makes them sober on a snowy day. He stirs air thick like old coffee with the tip of his cue and launches off into dramatic monologue about social injustices. The men playing on the next table listen with their eyes. Outside, a truck throws salt onto icy streets, and men wrapped up in financial depression walk past on their way to the closest bar. On the radio, Thelonious Monk attacks piano keys, backs off, then returns. His silences are silly little tricks that make Aristotle nervous. Even though he's on step four, Aristotle sneaks out to his car to shotgun a beer and smoke a cigarette. Back inside, he uses the shadow of his stick to line up shots. When he misses, he leans into the table and whispers inaudibly to his ghost opponent. Once, he likened his life to a snow globe that some stupid motherfucker keeps picking up and shaking. I like that metaphor. I really do like that metaphor.
Nice. Yeah, I was going to ask a question because I've only was able to read so much of your work because I know that you just mailed some books here that April's reading, so I was only able to read your little book thus far and what I could find off the internet. And have you always been like, or the stuff, it's at least, I'm going on some of the stuff that I read, is it more like, have you always done the more narrative approach or you just, whatever you feel like doing?
I think I've always been narrative.
Okay.
I studied poetry, which, I went to school and did the whole thing. And I kind of always stuck with narrative. I never really went into forms. You know, I know all the forms and all that stuff, but I kind of always just wrote. And
yeah.
I never really got into, putting myself into that, any kind of fixed approach, or I didn't really buy into the mass-produced poetry culture that sometimes happens. And I know, there's many people that write that have degrees that are fabulous, and I'm not knocking that, but I didn't buy into changing my approach.
I understand. No, I appreciate it.
That's always been a struggle.
Yeah, I think that, like, the point of the show is I have so many different types of writers on that when I do this show. A lot of them are narrative writers, but some aren't. And it's just to bring a mix because, you know, I do have stuff on my bookshelf that's not, like, you know, all narrative, too, but... You know, I just always ask that question sometimes. I'm curious to know.
Yeah, I love traditional poetry. You know, I love Eliot. I love, Dickinson. But my true love, stuff that, you want to read over and over again. I would read Raymond Carver's poetry any day of the week, or Jane Kenyon, or, and then, some of the small press writers that just blow my mind. Annie Menenbroker and John Dorsey, and there's so many. I hate to say names, and,
yeah,
because I know I'll forget. Some of my great friends are great poets, and I feel very lucky to know them as people too. Nate Graziano and Dan Crocker are phenomenal poets, and I have a mix too.
That's cool. So, Yeah, there's 20 minutes left out there in the calling world, so if you want to call in, you should start getting around to that now. So we're going to ask, what was your thoughts and views on the shutdown of the Zima product?
I'm crying. You know, Zima was awesome. I don't care what anyone says. I'm all for Zima. I know it was like a wussy girl drink. You know what I mean? Like, I'm fine with that. But, like, on this hot summer night, you've seen those commercials. Like, wouldn't you love to be hanging on the rooftop with a bunch of friends drinking Zima?
I don't know.
You can't deny it. Like, playing tag football.
I'd like to be on the rooftop and playing tag football, but I think beer or something would be much better than Zima. And it's, like, stickiness that it left on your fingers because it was, like, drinking, like, a piece of candy or something, if I remember correctly. Was the myth true about Zima? Cops couldn't, like, breathalyze you for it?
I heard that. I did. Yeah, it was totally a myth. But I remember that as well. I graduated from high school in 95. And I remember my parents bought like a few cases of Zima for my party, which was so cool. You know, I was like, Zima, yeah. And I'll never forget that. I mean, I just, you know, like cases of Zima, you know. Like, I'll never see that again. I'm getting teary-eyed. I'm sorry.
Perhaps down the line you should write a couple of Zima poems.
I don't think I could do that justice, you know. Like, it's so heartfelt. And
okay, so why don't you read us another non-Zima poem?
A non-Zima poem? Okay. I'm gonna kind of scroll down for a second.
Okay.
I hate computers. I'm like, wish I could get mine to print. I'm so, you know, not good at functioning in the real world.
I understand.
I'm going to read this one. It's called On With a Sad Day. And this character's is real too, you know, and most of the stuff in this poem is actually very spot on. It's kind of sad because I think of all these men that, like, I had this really strong relationship and a weird relationship with. And that, like, sometimes I kind of see around town, but some of them I have not seen since we closed. And this is one of my other favorite people that I haven't seen. So it's called On With This Sad Day. When unlucky Louie walks into the pool hall, he always greets me with, "Hey, honey, I'm home." If he's got work on the horizon, he's relatively happy. And if not, he usually talks about moving out of town. Most of the time, he's mentally packing. Today, unlucky Louie's pool stick betrays him, the way my body has done to me lately. After cursing the balls for 10 minutes, he packs up but pays for the hour, bringing me up to date on his world. His neighbors keep him up all night, and their cats spray his welcome mat. His landlord won't fix the leaky roof, so he lets the rainwater collect in empty paint cans that stain circles into his carpet. His boys play video games day and night, eat all his food and drink his whiskey. They don't work and won't shovel the walkway, and he's tired, so tired of this damn town. And he can't shoot for shit, and he's gonna retire. And the women at the bars aren't the same anymore. No one wants to have good, clean fun. No one wants to go out dancing. No one wants to listen to anyone anymore. So he stays home to watch the boob tube. When he's done with his tirade, he leans into the counter and asks, "How are you, doll, and the little one?" He's the only one who asks sincerely. For this, I want to tell him the truth about how my body has turned against me since the birth of my daughter, and how I love her so much, but at the same time long for my old self, before the tearing and scarring of motherhood and the surgeries that have only made it worse. But no man wants to hear about these kinds of grievances, these bodily sacrifices women make. And men don't want to share their honest heartaches, the loneliness that settles down next to them in bed where their wives are or were, because then we would all know each other intimately and we wouldn't be able to escape into our own private sad days.
Wow. Wow. What's the name of the pool hall book again? I've forgotten.
It's called Cadillac Men.
Cadillac Men? Maybe I didn't ask you that because I don't even remember you saying that.
I probably didn't.
And that comes out in October?
Yeah, and so I'm coming out from New York Quarterly Press.
Uh-huh. New York Quarterly Press is pretty great, and sounds like that book's going to be pretty damn awesome because I'm rather blown away by your stories about these people. It seems like there was a real connection with you for these people in some way or another.
Yeah, I feel really like, you know, I've been thinking, you know, because you kind of like, you know, like when you're writing and you have that separation between books and like what's going on in your life day to day and survival and work and, you know, it's funny, it's weird and funny and in a good way that like now here I am like finally getting it out there and I've been working, you know, these poems I wrote kind of quickly, not quickly, but like over, you know, like in 2007, probably 2008. And, you know, I really reworked the manuscript. I wrote the manuscript into a book and then I kept the poetry manuscript and then New York Quarterly, Raymond Hammond was like, I sent it to him and he was like, yeah, I want to publish it. And so I ended up publishing the poems instead of the stories. And so it's been like, it's kind of weird to go back and read it now because it's nostalgic, you know?
Yeah. It's definitely cool though. I definitely look forward to that. So we're down to 12 minutes. So how can people get all your stuff that is out now?
Can I just ask one question? I think no one's calling in because no one likes Zima.
Yeah, it's quite true. It's probably very true. sometimes there's this guy that like this like friendly guy that calls in all the time, and he ends up calling in the last 5 minutes. And
I heard him. He's great.
And people seem to listen to the show often, but not many people really call in. They're like chicken or something. So I don't know what's going on. Everybody listens, but no one wants to call in.
I think people should call in and say whatever. Say they hate Zima. That's okay.
Yeah, they should call in and say, Rebecca Shimada, fuck you and your Zima.
I would love that.
So why don't you tell us where you can get your books? You can be serious for about a minute there, and then we'll move on.
All right. You can email me too. Like I love getting books from people. I'm like really weird like that. I'd rather get signed books than, you know, ordering them through a publisher and blah blah blah. So you could email me if you can find me on Facebook or I have a web page. It's www.RebeccaShimada.com. So you could email me that way, but also you can get my books, you know, on Amazon or Sunny Outside has one of my books. One of my books went out of print. It sold out, and it was a limited edition, so that's done. And I have a book out from a chapbook from Bottle of Smoke Press. The one that you have, the small one. So that, I think there's still copies of that. I'm not sure. I haven't asked Bill, but I think there's still copies of that. And when Cadillac Men comes out in October, that's going to be available, you know, through Amazon, I believe. And you can just go to the New York Quarterly site. But feel free if, like, you want to write me a note, tell me you hate Zima, tell me I fucking suck. I'd be more than happy to sign a book for you.
Did you serve Zima at your pool hall?
Oh God, I wish I did. It was out. It was, there was no Zima.
I think the date
was 1999. It's sad that I know this fact. I looked
time.
It up online. Yeah, because I was looking and I've been looking for products. I'm sorry.
Did they not have pink Zima as well?
Yeah, I've never had
pink
Zima. Wait, I kind of I vaguely remember gold Zima. Maybe I'm wrong.
I know. I think there was gold Zima when Zima started doing pretty bad on the market. They had to, like, bring out something fancy, like gold or pink or something.
What the hell happened that Zima did bad? I don't understand it. I mean, honestly, like, I don't know. Zima's, like, it's, you know, it's the fruit of the gods, you know?
You are probably the only person in America that I've ever spoken to that just said that Zima is the fruit of the gods.
Oh, my God.
I don't think Bruce Willis in his Seagram's commercials would even admit that.
I don't know. Yeah, he probably got paid a lot to say that. Seagram's is, ugh. You know, I've tried to find something like Zima, but there's nothing like Zima out there. So if anyone has any good leads on Zima-like beverages, you know, feel free to email me on that one.
Would I have like an offer to throw out there? If someone actually got Zima to be reborn, would you give them your entire catalogs of books?
If somebody was like really like put it out, oh yeah.
If someone was able to bring back Zima,
yeah, and I'd find
like,
my original poetry crap book that you write all that stupid stuff in that no one you know ever reads because it sucks so bad. I would sign that and give it to them.
Damn.
Not that they would ever want it.
Out there in listening land, you could get the entire Rebecca Shumata catalog if you bring back Zima. Or
everyone's
maybe
like, oh, yeah,
just...
no.
Okay, we got 7 minutes, so why don't you give us another poem?
Yeah, I'll give you another poem. But you know what? I have to tell you
We have a caller. We can ask the Zima question now. Hello, who's on air? Is this
hey,
Jeff?
Frank. Jeff.
What are your thoughts on Zima? Did you like Zima?
Yeah, I got a lot of pull with the Zima people, so I'll get right on that one. Rebecca, nice job. Love the readings. Nice sketches. Really good. You're welcome. Thank you. My question to you would be, who do you find as being your influences? I mean, obviously you're your own voice, but who do you find as being specifically, you know, the well that you kind of return to kind of reinvigorate your creativity?
I would you know, I mean, obviously any time I read a book, like you kind of bring that, you know, like whatever it is you're reading into, if you're reading something really good. Like I just read Dan Fonte after hearing Frank's show because I had read his father. And lately I've been really grooving on him. But I think all-time favorite is I love Raymond Carver. I mean, that poem he wrote for his daughter. And I don't know the title because I'm bad with that stuff. But, he said, you know, you're a beautiful drunk. And I mean that poem is just, I mean it's so honest and out there. I love him. I like the honesty of Bukowski. I don't like all the hype, you know, sometimes, but I think he's, you know, spot on all the time. And you know, I read a lot of, you know, small press, like, you know, like Dorsey and Taylor and Graziano and a whole bunch of other people. And lately, you know, I have to say, Frank's girlfriend, I really like her work. You know, so it's always changing. And Jane Kenyon, I'm a big Jane Kenyon fan.
Very interesting. Yeah, I mean, your sketches are real, I say sketches, you know, they're like dramatic monologues, really. They're just, you know, they're very powerful, they're very real. I think that's the key word. You know, they're so real, so you do a wonderful job of doing that, and they certainly get at the emotions. So it's well done. Nice job. I look forward to the work. What was it, October it's coming out?
Yeah, in October.
In October. Very good. All right.
Yeah.
Well, it's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome. And the Zima thing, I'll get that taken care of. Don't worry about it.
Yes.
So we're down to 4 minutes. Rebecca should take us out with a poem, I would think.
Okay. I'm going to read this one. It's about a character named Willie the Whale. And he's what a cool character. I just have to say this. I usually don't want to like lead people into something with this, but his son was the real person. His son was actually a welterweight boxer that passed away like 2 years ago, and he's from Kingston, and you know, pretty famous for this area. And so anyway, this is called The Table Swallows Willie the Whale. The table swallows Willie, like poetry does to me, takes us away from the day's drudgery, paying the bills, worrying about what will break next and where we'll get the money to fix it. 15 object balls spread out across the felt, 26 letters in the alphabet. We both dream of possibilities, combinations, perfect breaks. He spends afternoons practicing how to miss a shot, while I pick apart words to resurrect. We both have our own language, underappreciated and misunderstood. We both struggle with rules. I hold my pen with the same intensity he does his cue. Felt and paper, obstacles we navigate. It's when writing swallows me that I understand his Captain Ahab-ish obsession. How he sacrificed his wife and children, how the world so invasive disappears when he leans over to line up a shot.
Wow. These are just like fantastic poems, and I definitely want to get the Cadillac Men book myself, and I think everybody else should get one out there because Rebecca's an amazing writer. But it was great to have you on. We're down to the last 30 a minute or so here, and then the lady's going to cut me off, the robotic lady that you don't get to hear.
Thank you so much, Frank. Your show's awesome, and I really enjoy all the writers you have on.
Thank you. Thank you for being here. It was great to have you on, and I'm sure I'll see you in the virtual world.
All right. Take care.
You too. Have a good one. And that was Rebecca Shimada, her new book coming out of New York Quarterly Press, Cadillac Men, in October. Check it out. Send her a note on Facebook or go to New York Quarterly Press's website. And for any of her other books, Amazon or her own personal website, or email her. And next week we're going to kind of have like an open mic talk in a way, kind of. It's going to be a Scott Wahnberg tribute show. You can call in and read a Scott poem or share a Scott memory or say something about Scott or, you know, anything, because Scott was a good friend of mine. I mean, I only knew him personally the last 2 years, and I really miss his phone calls, or the times I got to see him. He was such a good friend and a sort of a mentor to me, and, you know, helped me out in many ways, and as he did so many other people, just because he loved writing and he loved books and poetry and novels. And anyway, so that's going to be next week's show, and I'm not sure off the top of my head who's after that. That starts the September set. So anyways, it was what the fuck ever, I suppose.